We live under a representative form of government. Unfortunately, not enough of us take the time to let our representatives know how we really feel about issues that concern us.
For Family Talk, here's Dr. James Dobson.
Letters and phone calls to our local officials, representatives, and senators do make a difference, and they certainly need to hear from us. Let me offer a few ideas that may help in making your letter the most effective it can be. First, be brief and restrict each letter to one subject or one piece of legislation. This makes it easier for the person you're writing to respond and for their staff to organize correspondence. If the letter is about a specific bill, identify it by name and number. Second, make your letter personal. Form letters and postcards do have a place, but personal letters get more attention. Describe how the proposed bill or course of action would affect you or your family or your community. Give the essential background information as well. And third, remember that elected officials receive thousands of letters of complaint and very few positive responses. If someone you've elected to serve you says or does something that you like, respond with a quick thank you note of appreciation. And by all means, remember this. Democracy works best when the people make their wants and wishes known.
To find out how you can partner with Family Talk, go to drjamesdobson.org. This is Roger Marsh for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Now, before we begin this broadcast, I need to remind you that some of the content that we'll be discussing today is intended for mature audiences. So if you have little ones listening in right now, parental discretion is definitely advised. Either occupy them with something else, or you can come back to this presentation at a later time, listening on our website at drjamesdobson.org. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and this is James Dobson Family Institute. I'm recording these words on Tuesday, July 2nd, which will be heard on July 10th. Things are happening so quickly now that we can hardly keep up with what we need to report to you. So as I speak, I am greatly, greatly irritated by the lies and misinformation that are being promulgated to the American people. And it deals with the chaos occurring at the southern border. And what you are being told really does qualify not only as fake news, but it is outrageous fake news. For example, the mainstream media is all abuzz today over Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her claims that children at the border who are being detained by law for 72 hours are being treated horribly, and they don't even have clean water to drink, and that they drink toilet water, and that they have been abused in many other ways. I know this is a lie because I was there several weeks ago. We were escorted through the inner workings of the border facility. The border guides there are good people, and they are frustrated, and they're doing everything they can to deal with the flood of people that are arriving every day. I came home from that visit very disturbed, and I wrote a letter to set the record straight. And that letter has now been read by more than 1 million people, and the post of it went viral. I want to read to you what I wrote in that letter for those who haven't seen it. And these are my words, having returned from the border. Dear friends, several weeks ago, I was invited by the White House staff to visit our southern border at McAllen, Texas, where federal agents are struggling to deal with a massive influx of poor and destitute human beings. They come in never-ending waves. Please believe me when I tell you that the media and leftist politicians have not been truthful about what's going on there. It is a human tragedy. I promised the exhausted U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents that I would go home and tell as many people as possible what I had seen up close and personal. Today, I'm attempting to fulfill that commitment. Approximately 5,500 people show up every day in districts organized along our southern U.S. border. McAllen is the site of only one of them, but it is the busiest and most besieged. The refugees arrive exhausted and ragged from walking hundreds of miles. Among them are large numbers of children, many of whom are unaccompanied by a caring adult. Last year, 382,000 aliens were apprehended for illegally crossing into this country, and almost 100,000 of them were minors. Consider that. These are kids. Some of them have been abused along the way. Many of them carry lice or scabies or other diseases. Currently, the facility is experiencing a flu epidemic, and there are no additional beds on which to lie. Some of the women have been raped. More than 70 people of all ages are sent to local hospitals daily along the southern border. Doctors and medical staff are overwhelmed by their patient load. Remember that word, overwhelmed. It describes every aspect of the effort to deal with the situation there. It is systemic, and it's been brewing for more than a decade. The most heart-wrenching experience occurred during our tour of the holding area. It is a huge gym-like building consisting of dozens of fenced-in areas. Each one is crowded with detainees, standing or sitting shoulder to shoulder on benches. They stared out at us with plaintive eyes. I noticed that almost none of them were talking to each other. The children looked traumatized and frightened. Tears flooded my eyes as I stood before them. They had no toys or dolls, except for a few items brought by compassionate Border Patrol agents. One tiny little girl clutched something that resembled a doll brought to her by an agent. There are few provisions made to accommodate the children. The week before we were there, a delegation of agents went to meet with members of Congress and begged them for additional money to buy Pampers and toothbrushes and other necessities. They were turned down flat. These meager supplies have to be purchased with the Border Patrol budget, which is stretched to the limit. I then walked up to a fenced area holding many skinny young men. An agent standing beside me asked if I would like to speak to them. He offered to translate for me, to which I replied, "Please tell them that God loves them." Then I said, "Now tell them that I love them too." They smiled and waved timidly. My heart aches for these poor people. Lest I be misunderstood, let me make it clear that I'm among the majority of Americans who want the border to be closed to those who are attempting to enter illegally. There has to be a better solution than this. I have wondered with you why the authorities don't just deny these refugees access to this nation. Can't we just send them back to their places of origin? The answer I received was no, for the reasons I will explain. Only 10% of the detainees are Mexicans. This year alone, people have come to our southern border from 127 countries, including Bangladesh, Pakistan, Turkey, India, China, Albania, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and other nations around the world. Most of them speak their native tongues, which means that they can't understand each other or the staff. What are we to do with them? The Mexican government will not take them back. There is no place to send them. Our current laws do not permit us to repatriate them to the country of their origin. This is a disaster with no solution or projected conclusion. Let me tell you how these desperate people come to be our responsibility. They are the lowest rung of many societies. They sell their shanties or any other possessions to scrape together $3,500 to $10,000 to pay coyotes to guide them. I don't know what happens to those who can't meet this demand. Apparently, most manage to pay the fee and arrive penniless and profoundly needy. I was told that some of the vulnerable children are recycled repeatedly to help men gain entry into this country. An unknown number of these men are hardened criminals and drug runners, and they are difficult to identify. Most make their way across the border. Here's something else you should know. I have been under the impression that these would-be immigrants try to cross the Rio Grande River and outrun or evade the agents. This is not true of most. They come in large groups, from 100 to 400 people at a time. As I write this letter, a record 1,200 people arrive together at El Paso. The refugees quickly give themselves up to the agents. This is why they have made the journey. They know that they will be fed and medicated and treated humanely, even if they are in holding areas where they are in our custody. Ultimately, America is the promised land, and they're determined to get here if possible. Most will eventually be released on American soil. This is the system set up by a liberal Congress and judges. It's a well-known fact that President Obama's administration established many of these unworkable policies, and Congress is steadfastly unwilling to change them. Every effort at reform has been overridden or ignored. It is set in stone. Democrats want massive numbers of immigrants who will someday become voters. Some Republicans support the policies because they want cheap labor for agricultural purposes. The border could be fixed, but there are very few in authority who seem to care. Getting back to my story, our group of national faith leaders and humanitarian organizations was taken to a grassy park underneath an international bridge where the coyotes bring the refugees. We stood 50 feet away from them and watched as about 200 people sat on the ground. Then buses arrived to transport them to border control. Agents have to work fast because another group will be showing up soon, and then another and another. The would-be immigrants are taken to the center and given cursory medical exams. Then they are segregated by sex and age and placed in the fenced-in areas to be held for the next 20 days until they are processed and given a notice to appear. If that sounds inhumane, what would you or I do? There is simply no other place to house them. Mismanagement of the border has a long history. A federal judge years ago issued a ruling called the Flores Settlement Agreement. It is still the source of many problems. It requires that any unaccompanied alien child must be released within 72 hours. This is now the law of the land, and poor people around the world know it. A single male typically seeks to find a child and a woman to help him game the system. Clearly, many of these are fake families, but there is no documentation in Pakistan or Bangladesh to challenge the claims. Lawyers at home have told them to claim that they are fleeing from oppression or seeking asylum. They're allowed to plead their cases to judges, but there are too few of them to keep up with the volume. These people are given court cases and released. The vast majority of them are never seen again. Most of them become anchor babies who are citizens with rights to bring members of their families. Others are given transportation to an American city where they disappear into the culture. In addition to this influx of people from places around the world steeped in poverty and despair, Senator Chuck Schumer authored and helped to pass a lottery system whereby winners are brought to the United States. They become permanent residents who then begin bringing their families to our shores. Thank you, Senator. 10 years ago, 90% of illegals apprehended at the border were single males, mainly from Mexico. Now more than 50% show up with babies and children, and 90% of them are from countries other than Mexico, with 64% being family units or unaccompanied alien children. Together they claim to be families, and within 3 weeks they will be home free in America. Is there any doubt why there have been more than a 500,000 illegal immigrants this year alone? Before I conclude, I must tell you about the agents who have to deal with this chaos. They are compassionate men and women, sworn to uphold federal law and protect the borders. They obviously care about the detainees, and I respect them highly. They work tirelessly, feeding people 3 times a day and providing clean clothing. And yes, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they provide children and adults with clean water. And despite what you have told them, they do not drink toilet water. These agents clean and maintain portable toilets in the cells. They have a never-ending task. There are only 2 large showers in the facility, one for males and the other for females. Their capacity is for only 20 people at a time, which is insufficient. The Border Patrol agents administer this program, but most of them didn't sign up to be caregivers. Agents were trained to patrol the border and apprehend drug runners and traffickers and smugglers and murderers and every kind of lawbreaker. This is very dangerous work, and some of them don't survive. But please understand this. The Border Patrol agents are so busy caring for refugees seeking entry into the United States that they have very little time to police the borders. It is so porous that huge quantities of contraband, including all kinds of narcotics, flow into this country every day. And then it's transported northward to America's cities to be consumed and used by adolescents and millennials. Lawless gangs such as MS-13 are also pouring into the culture, making violence for inner cities a way of life. This is the mess that's been created. There is one more aspect to the work of these agents that you should know. They are openly hated by citizens who resent the work they do. They're lied about, as we have seen. They're routinely vilified and mocked and demonized. Their families are also subject to ridicule. These agents need our appreciation and prayers. They have one of the most thankless jobs in America. The situation that I've described is the reason President Donald Trump's border wall is so urgently needed. He seems to be the only leader in America who comprehends this tragedy and is willing to address it. Those who oppose him do everything they can to impede his effort. That's why I went to the border to see the situation for myself. I came away with an array of very intense emotions. First, I was profoundly grieved over the misery of thousands of people. Second, I felt a deep appreciation for those who are doing their best to help in an impossible circumstance. Third, and frankly, I was angry at the political fat cats who have deliberately allowed the chaos to occur for political or financial gain. They and their friends in the fake media have told the American people that there is no crisis at the border. I say shame on them all. What I've told you is only a glimpse of what is occurring on the nation's border. I don't know what it'll take to change the circumstances. I can only report that without an overhaul of the law and the allocation of resources, millions of illegal immigrants will continue flooding into this great land from around the world. Many of them have no marketable skills. They are illiterate and unhealthy. Some are violent criminals. Their numbers will soon overwhelm the culture as we have known it, and it could also bankrupt the nation. America has been a wonderfully generous and caring country since its founding. This is our Christian nature. But in this instance, we have met a worldwide wave of poverty that will take us down if we don't deal with it. and it won't take long for the inevitable consequences to happen. Thanks for letting me set the record straight. And then there's this P.S. I want to conclude this disturbing account of the border situation with a suggested action item for the reader. There is only one solution as I see it, which is for people of faith to pray for our president as he seeks to deal with this humanitarian crisis. He's facing enormous opposition from both political parties, the mainstream media, the entertainment industry, the judiciary, portions of agriculture, powerful lobbies, and virtually every dimension of culture. Also, the refugees themselves and their children should be remembered in prayer, as well as the Border Patrol agents. Finally, pray for those who are serving in humanitarian efforts. One of the primary organizations working at the border is Convoy of Hope. You can reach them through convoyofhope.org. In closing, if you have thoughts on this incredibly complicated and emotional and painful issue, I would sure like to hear from you. Go to drjamesdobson.org or go to our Facebook page to comment. With that, I say goodbye. God's blessings to you all.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Family Talk, a division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh. And did you know that our ministry is entirely supported by listeners just like you? Your generous financial contributions allow us to reach struggling families and marriages around the world. This is what the Lord has called us to do, and we need your help to continue this work. Visit drjamesdobson.org for more information. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or call toll-free. 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825 to learn how you can partner with us. Thank you so much for your support at the James Dobson Family Institute, and God bless you.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton for the James Dobson Family Institute. Are you leaving a lasting and godly legacy? When you think about your family after you're gone, are you worried about them? Or are you confident they'll hold on to what you've taught them? At the Dobson Family Institute, we're committed to helping you understand the importance of passing on your faith, not only to your children, but to your children's children, too. Check out drjamesdobson.org today for helpful hints, tips, and advice to help make this happen. Remember this, your legacy matters. Don't waste it.
Have you ever felt like the whole world was stacked against you, that you never quite get a fair shake? Have you ever said to yourself after a loss or failure, well, what'd you expect? Nothing ever goes right for me anyway. Actually, this defeatist attitude is very common today, especially among people with a disability or those who don't like the way they look or those who were abused as children and so on. It's natural, but it's not helpful for such individuals to feel victimized by the circumstances of life. Unfortunately, our society is now telling all of us that we're victims of some sort of unfairness. Hispanics, African Americans, Asians, Jews, Native Americans, women, children, the elderly, the sick, the poor, the uneducated, and now even white males are supposed to feel discriminated against. It's what I call the victimization of everybody. Now, obviously, discrimination and racism and sexism and ageism are still very serious problems in this culture, and we need to resolve them. But it doesn't help for people to conclude that they're being had in one way or another. That mindset is demoralizing. It paralyzes us emotionally, and it leads us to throw up our hands and say, "What's the use? I can't win." Eleanor Roosevelt, who had some very serious handicaps in life, once said, "No one can make a fool out of you without your permission." Well, it's true. And no one can victimize you but yourself.
To find out how you can partner with Family Talk, go to drjamesdobson.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thank you so much for listening today to Family Talk, a radio production of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit about our growing ministry here. This new institute is continuing Dr. Dobson's life work by fighting for marriages and families. It's no secret that our Christian values are under attack, and we must stand up for righteousness and biblical truth unashamedly. We believe this new institute is doing just that. I urge you, take a moment, would you, to learn more at the DobsonFamilyInstitute.com. DobsonFamilyInstitute.com. Aside from our Family Talk broadcast, there are three other divisions through which we're continuing this legacy of work. The first one is our educational partnerships with colleges and universities to encourage the next generation. Secondly is the Dobson Policy Center. It keeps you informed on how the political arena influences the family. And lastly is our online collection of all of Dr. Dobson's work in the Dobson Digital Library. We're excited here at JDFI for this expansion. We hope you'll partner with us. Go to DobsonFamilyInstitute.com and discover more about each of these divisions, maybe how you can be a part. Thanks for standing with us, and thanks for being a friend of the family.